Good morning, Barbados, and welcome to Brass Tack Sunday for March 8th. I am Sanka Price, and with me is Dennis Johnson, and his will be the first voice you'll hear this morning when you call us at 43-41-790. This morning, we will be discussing what's next for Guyana. We'll be looking at the political stalemate following last Monday's general and regional elections there, as well as examine the potential for opportunities for Barbados companies and Barbadian workers in an emerging oil-rich Guyana economy. Of course, you can also contact us here via WhatsApp at 266-4862. And when we come back, we will tell you who our panel is. But remember, this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
For Billions Surprise, big or small, at Billions Metals, we have it all.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material.
For Billions Surprise, big or small, at Billions Metals, we have it.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. I'm Sanka Price. For those who just joined us, our topic today is what's next for Guyana. We will be discussing the political stalemate following last Monday's general and regional elections in that country, as well as examine the potential opportunities for Barbados companies and Barbadian workers in an emerging oil-rich Guyana economy. In the studio, we have a career diplomat, retired career diplomat, Mr. Cecil Pilgrim. Good morning, sir. Thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. We're expected to be joined shortly by regional political pollster, Mr. Peter Wickham. And then we have on the telephone from Guyana, we hope to have Mr. Anand Prasad, from the editor-in-chief of Starbrook News, as well as Captain Gerald Govaya. He's the chairman of the Private Sector Association, the umbrella body for businesses in Guyana, and he's also the honorary consul for Barbados in Guyana. Welcome one and all, and thank you for agreeing to participate in today's program. Anand, could you give us an update on the situation in Guyana and an assessment of what may happen next?
Okay, so what is immediately going to happen today is the ruling by the Chief Justice on a case that had been brought by the PPP for the Townsville region, for the pivotal region, to be proceeded with according to law. She is to rule this afternoon on whether she has jurisdiction in that matter. So if she has jurisdiction in that matter and she then proceeds to hear the substantive case, she may then say, well, yes, I'll make a decision for Region 4 to be counted one way or the other. If she discharges the injunction that is currently in place, well, then that may lead to further court appeals. But we just have to wait then until 1:30 this afternoon to see what she says.
Okay. But what's your assessment of the situation? Does the court have jurisdiction? I mean, what are people saying, other legal people saying there?
I wouldn't impose my views on what the Chief Justice makes, but what I can tell you is that it's clear to all and sundry that what has gone on here is outright electoral. This is not even rigging, because rigging is something that requires some level of sophistication. This is outright theft in front of your face as you watch. So what has happened here is the GCOM, the chairwoman, the chief election officer, they're all hiding from the public. They have not provided any cogent explanation as to why it is they are not continuing with the count for this decisive region. And this state of affairs has been condemned by everybody. There is nobody that supports the government or GCOM in what it is they're doing. All of the observer missions here, the U.S., the UN, the OAS, CARICOM, the European Union, plus the AVC countries, the United Nations, the Embassy of France, unanimously all across the board have condemned what is happening here. And they have said in no uncertain terms that if there is any swearing in of a president on this illegal process, there will be no recognition for Guyana. So that is really where we stand at the moment. It all depends on what the court and GCOM do at this point.
I also read this morning, of course, in the Starbrook News, that that Ms. Keith Lowenfield, the chief election officer, that they were trying to have the results for Region 4 verified.
Right. Well, what they did is to do what is statutorily required at some point, which is the publication of all of the certified results. So what they have done purportedly is to publish the results for all 10 regions. Now, there had not been any dispute about 9 of the regions. It was the last region, Region 4, which would have decided who had won the election, which was in conflict. But he has now since published the results for all the regions, including Region 4, even though it is clear that that region was not properly counted, and that's really where the whole conflict and controversy rests.
On the ground, Anand, and for those just joining us, we're speaking to Anand Prasad. He's the editor-in-chief of the Starbrook News, a newspaper that I think it's the European Union. Yes, it is the European Union observer mission, credited with being very independent and even-handed in their coverage of what was happening in terms of the Guyana elections. Anand, could you also let us Barbadians know what is the actual feeling on the ground as you move around not only Georgetown but the East Bank, on the East Coast, in Berbice? What is the feeling on the ground among the people? What are they saying?
Well, there's great anger, of course, among the constituency of the opposition PPP because they're supposed to feel that they've been robbed outright of this election. And, of course, on Friday, that erupted into protests along the East Coast, on the East Bank and the West Bank of Demerara. So those protests did mushroom into significant events. A teenager was killed after he was shot at by the police. These are alleging that he attacked him in a couple of hours, and the police are saying that they shot at him. Several other people were injured, so it was a very ugly scene. So there is that fear and apprehension among the supporters of the PPP that they, you know, this election is being stolen from them. This community is also convulsed. Quite a lot of people shut up their stores, and businesses come to standstill in some areas, and everybody's waiting to see what is going to happen. So there's great anger in the constituency of the PPP and consternation and concern, and there's also, you know, anxiety across the board as to where we go from here. But the bottom line is that this government is at this point facing complete international isolation if it goes ahead and attempts to swear in this president without the verification of the Region 4 results.
All right. Thank you, Anand Prasad, the editor-in-chief of Starbuck News, just giving us an overview. I don't know if you would want to stay on the line for a short while, but we also have the chairman of the Private Sector Association of Guyana, that is Captain Gerald Govaya, who's also the honorary consul for Barbados. Captain Govaya, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
And Captain Govaya, I can hear from your voice how concerned you are. And over the last few days when I saw you in Guyana, I know that you were extremely concerned about the situation. But the first question I need to ask you is, how is this unstable political situation affecting businesses in Guyana?
It's terrible. Everybody, first of all investors have taken their feet off the pedal. Business in Guyana basically grinding to a halt on other than essential services. So it's really bad. Even in our commercial areas, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of apprehension. And then there's, like Anand said, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of genuine anger. And not only with PPP supporters, but people who would be considered to be independent thinkers. The fact that our democracy could have been so brazen and blatantly and brutally assaulted that day. And I was standing in the room when it happened, and I could not believe what was happening. And so the entire business community is in a state of shock. Everything has come to a standstill.
Did you really expect something like this to happen?
No. I was in the room. I was one of the accredited observers. And I actually, let me make this right. I observed these elections. I went with the U.S. ambassador and the British High Commission. And I'm a pilot. So I flew them that day on election day. I flew them to about 4 other regions where we went and observed the polling stations. And I want to tell you, the polling that happened in Guyana that day was amazing. We found across the board in a unified way, GCOM staff that was properly trained. They were conducting themselves well. They were helpful. the election system was well run. It was robust. The security was good. Nobody could vote twice. Nobody could vote for somebody else. And throughout the system, and I think even at the end of the day, when all of the observers made their first public declaration on the election, everybody spoke about how well and how credible the system were. So up to the time when the polls were going to be counted at the ballot box level, there was no problem. And then, so the night after you close the ballot box, and then the statements of poll went to the returning officers. So we have 10 regions, and we have 10 returning officers. And so the statements of poll went to those returning officers with the intention that sometime at midnight or just after midnight, all of the parties for that region will go where he is, and they will sit around a table with him, and then they will open a spreadsheet, and he will start to open every statement of poll one by one, put it in the spreadsheet, and all the party agents would verify the numbers going into the spreadsheet to tabulate the regional results, would be in agreement with everybody. And that started in Region 4 that night, and then it was aborted. So while you need to be diligent and you need to be very, very careful what you're doing, it's not a complex, it's a very simple addition problem entering information into an Excel spreadsheet. And so he aborted it, and it was aborted for like 8-9 hours to start back the next day. In the meantime, the other regions were doing their tabulation. And like Anand said, we end up receiving nine regions and their results, which is there was no controversy with that process. In Region 4, the next morning, we got there to start back. He came back and he started, and then within an hour, he got sick. So they had to remove him away to the hospital. And for the whole day, nothing was going on. Finally, the night, they brought two young girls. Now, Region 4 got 90 deputy returning officers. They didn't bring those. They bring two young girls to do it. And when they came to the table, rather than using the statements of poll, they came. That's the first time we knew something was going wrong. They brought a spreadsheet that was already filled out. And everybody objected to it. But they still go ahead and start calling the numbers. And then when you compare the numbers that was on the statements of poll, they were totally fabricated. So people objected to that process. Finally, the commission met, and the commission aborted that process. Lone Peter came into the office, into the room, and he assured everybody that we are sorry, we're going to start over, and we're going to go right through the night and get this finished. So they started again, and within an hour, the girls said they wanted a break, and then they aborted the process. And we were forced to start back the next morning. By this time, we only had 300 out of 879 statements of poll tabulated. The next morning, everybody is there. Every single person is there, including all of the diplomatic community, because this is the last region now, and the results will be given. Then this man walked into the room, the guy that went to the hospital. Suddenly, he reappeared with a paper in his hand. He said, I come to declare the results. So people said, but how could you come to declare results when we have not finished what we were doing here? And he walked into the room and went to the top of the stairs and started to attempt to read out what this fabricated number that he got in the spreadsheet, which was not verified. And of course, the room went ballistic. But what was worse is that the statements of poll that need to be in the custody, the chain of custody at all times of all the parties. Later that night, the police moved into the room in full riot gear and evicted everybody. And so the statement of poll was left on the desk and without any breaking the chain of custody. So even as we speak now, the 543 statements of poll that was left there, nobody knows where they are, what happened to them. And so this, like Anand said, this is really, really a brutal assault on the rule of law and democracy and transparency and credibility. So whatever good things that happened in that election for the nine other regions and everything else, this here, and the reason that this was going to be the backbreaker for the elections, because this is the biggest region. Now, so here we are, and all the international community condemned this. The business community that was very involved in this election was walking around in a daze and shocked. We could not believe what was happening. What we are worried about now, of course, is that even if you start back the verification process, which statements of poll are they using? And how do we know those statements are false? What custody they were in? What is the integrity of those statements false? So if they start to call out different numbers, and the people around the table, the parties and the observers have different numbers to what they're calling, what happens then? So this is we still have some challenges going on, but we got to wait to hear what the court has to say.
What do you plan to do about this situation in terms of the business committee? What do you plan to do about this? Do you plan silent protest by closing your businesses? What do you plan to do?
Well, businesses are closed already. I mean, it's closed just because they're even the staff is afraid to go to work. And we've had so much anger in Guyana that people have been rising up along our East Coast, and they've been this was unprecedented. I have never seen the people on the East Coast in all my 40 years of in adult life here in Guyana. I have never seen the people on the East Coast rise up and behave so badly, and they were so angry, and they were attacking the police, and that was unacceptable. And they were attacking other people, and that was unacceptable. And we condemn that. As the private sector, we condemn any kind of violent action or disrespect for the police and so on. But we know that people are angry, and so we call on political leaders to tell their supporters to go back home. For us, we will continue to have to work with the international community to bring pressure and to ensure that the government, whichever government is sworn in, will be sworn in as a democratically elected government. If any government is sworn in with these results, it will throw CARICOM into a spiral, because I don't know how CARICOM would find the backbone to work with a government that is sworn in with these results. And so it puts the Prime Minister of Barbados, which is the leader of CARICOM at this time, in a very difficult position, and the region and the leaders across the region. How do they work with a leader that might have been elected by these results, or not elected, but installed with these results? And so I'm hoping that we go back to the tabulation process. We may have to go back and open the ballot boxes and count back the votes in the boxes for this. For the 879 ballots, to make sure that we have the correct number. And then we all have to commit to living with the number after the fact. But the transparency process got to work. And that is what we are going to be doing. We will be working very hard with the international community, with the international observers, to bring credibility to these elections.
Mm-hmm. Last question. Guyana is supposed to, with the oil beginning to flow already. Guyana's economy for this year is supposed to be, 86%? The GDP is supposed to really take off. How is this going to impact on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because I've been meeting a lot of businessmen from Barbados, and I make the point all the time. Guyana, we just don't have enough human resources in Guyana. We just don't have we don't have all of the capacity to observe the local content that will be required to meet this new economic explosion that is before us. And so I basically foresee Guyana being not only the economic breadbasket of the Caribbean, but also a job market for the Caribbean. I see us employing Caribbean people all over this region, and I see a lot of opportunities for Barbados business people. But here is a situation that is going to seriously threaten. It will seriously threaten what is before us. And I am almost certain that the international community would also not view very kindly any government that attempts to steer itself in. With these numbers, Guyana will probably suffer a very serious backlash from the Organization of American States, from CARICOM, from the world community. So if we don't fix this now, we have a small window to fix it. Guyana is going to be in a deep spiral. You know what they say, the prosperity of a country got little to do with the quantum of our natural resources. No matter how much oil we got, it depends on the quality of our leadership. Look what happened in Venezuela. And I'll tell you, if we don't fix this, we'll be very, very close to that. We are very close to going into chaos, going into becoming a fragile state. And so I hope our political leaders do not allow this greed. And you know what Michelle Obama said? She said, power don't corrupt. Power reveals truly who you are. It reveals truly who you are. And this is about right and wrong. This is people who are fighting against transparency and democracy are on the wrong side of the law, on the wrong side of wrong. They're all wrong. And we need to fix that. And we need our Caribbean brothers and sisters, we need the business community in Barbados to raise their voices in support of the rule of law, in support of democracy. We need all of the Caribbean business associations not to be silent, because Guyana could create a tremendous amount of business for the Caribbean, a tremendous amount of employment for Caribbean brothers and sisters. This is not a fight for Guyana business community alone. This is a fight for all of the business across the Caribbean to fight for Guyana. Fight for Guyana democracy. Fight for the rule of law. Fight to create the enabling environment to make for all of us to benefit from the wealth of Guyana.
All right. That is Captain Gerald Govaya. He's the chairman of the Private Sector Association, the umbrella body for all the businesses in that country. He's also the honorary consul for Barbados. We also have on the line Mr. Peter Wickham. He's, of course, the regional pollster and fellow moderator. Peter, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Sanka. Good to be with you. And good morning to the two gentlemen in Georgetown. I listen with great interest to their stories.
Yes. And, of course, there's Mr. Cecil Pilgrim here as well.
And good morning, Cecil.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. What did you make of this this swing towards the PPP? Based on the results in the other nine regions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the contribution that I can bring to the conversation. I totally support a lot of the comments I've heard previously. Let me just say at the outset, I did a poll in Guyana. The results have already made their way into the public domain, but it would have been well over a year ago. That poll showed that an outcome consistent with what existed before would have been the position then. And this was a poll soon after the vote of no confidence. And it essentially said that the PPP, the PNC, which is the APNUASC, had a marginal lead of, say, 51%, which was consistent with what existed before. My sense on the ground was that there needed to have been another testing, because we had an entire year of political activity. And it was difficult for me to say at the outset what the mood was. And certainly, if you listen to the propaganda of both parties, they were both winning. I couldn't get a sense on the ground, and I had no access to poll data. I understand that there was a poll conducted before the election, but I have no access to the results of that information. Notwithstanding the first nine regions coming in, I did an analysis, and I calculated that the swing towards the PPP Civic was to the extent of 11%. Now, in context of a country like Guyana, where the previous government had a 1 percentage point lead on the opposition, a swing of 11% essentially gives the PPP Civic a comfortable government. I mean, more comfortable than they would have had in a long time. Not a one-seat majority, but I'm estimating it would have been a two- or three-seat majority. So the question is, could that be reversed in Region 4? And the short answer is yes, it could have been. My sense is that it was highly unlikely, because what I saw in the other regions was a significant swing in favor of the PPP Civic, a swing that would have, if it carried through, would have led to a situation where they would have been comfortably in government now. I don't know whether the dynamic in Region 4 was so hugely different. The results that I have seen thus far declared suggest that one of two things either happened. Either those results are not a reflection of what happened in terms of the count, or alternatively, the people of Region 4 were vastly different to the rest of the country in terms of their mood about the entire country. The demographic profile in Region 4 may be that different, but fundamentally, you know, it was not the case. The other thing I think is important to mention is that the strategy of the APNU APNU AFC group appear to have been to suggest that if we can capture some mood and some swing in the hinterland, in the interior, which would have been those other regions, that is essentially a platform for going into Georgetown. Because the argument was that if you can do better among those smaller communities, you come into Georgetown with an unassailable lead, pockets of small support to be able to deal with the brunt of the Region 4 group. That clearly did not materialize, because the verified results suggest that you were losing in the hinterland. And I mean, areas where the ASC, APNU spent considerable resources campaigning and also improving. I mean, there was a minister responsible for the interior. There was several efforts that were put into those areas, and those people didn't vote for the APNU AFC group, suggesting that the strategy there clearly failed. Now, if it is that your focus is on those regions, less so on Region 4, which is an entirely different beast because Region 4 is huge and so diverse, and you failed in that regard, then my assumption is that you would have failed in Region 4. Against the background of all of this, this idea of this stopping and conquer, I think, is scandalous, and I've said so publicly. I'm disturbed by it, and I'm disturbed that in the context of a country where you have had a history of this type of electoral manipulation, you know, we've finally been able to clean up our act regarding that over the last few years. To get back to a situation now where we have to be having a conversation like this 5 days after an election is just nothing short of scandalous. I had a sense, and I'm going to say this now, notwithstanding the fact that I may have been maybe stepping out of line, but I certainly had a sense that the majority of people seem to prefer the leadership of President Granger over Mr. Infernali. They certainly knew President Granger better than Infernali. And to that extent, a result that is reflecting a level of swing like this was a surprise to me. And I mean, I say that and accept whatever comes in it. So that part was a surprise because it was not consistent with my feeling from speaking to people. At the same time, however, I think that we run ourselves into problems if we expect an outcome and say that anything to the contrary is fictitious. And I think that that's the challenge that we're having here. A lot of people actually like President Granger a lot. A lot of people feel that he would be a better leader, a more solid leader in the context of what is happening with Guyana economically. But ultimately, that's not our call to make. You know, and I'm a pollster. I'm also a political analyst. And in many instances, you have to separate the outcome that you like and prefer from the outcome that is the reality. And I do feel that on election night, it was clear to me that the majority of Guyanese, based on the regions that were counted, expressed a view that was inconsistent with what my own expectation was. And I think that that's something that has to be respected. And I think that part of the challenge that we're having now is that people were so shocked by what they saw in those regions that they're saying, well, look, well, this can't be real. I've heard suggestions that there was voter padding. I've heard suggestions that there was voting from people who were not registered to vote. I've heard all of those things. But what I've said to people, if you support that view and you support the APNU group, then that has to be based on evidence presented to a court and response in electoral challenge. Now, it is unprecedented in the Caribbean that you have an incumbent challenging the outcome of an election that it has managed. But certainly it is possible. And I think that if this was the case, then what they need to do is to challenge those results, as opposed to what is happening now, which is they're saying, look, I mean, this is what we saw, and, you know, you just accept it in the unverified way. So those are my preliminary comments.
All right, Peter, thank you. And, of course, we have in the studio career diplomat, Mr. Cecil Pilgrim. What do you make of this whole situation?
Well, it is clearly a most unfortunate situation. And the principles are clear. If you have an election where the statements of poll need to be verified, then the statements of poll need to be verified. It is clearly stated by those in Guyana that these polls have not been verified, that there's been some attempt to manufacture the result in Region 4. Now, if that's the case, that is clearly unacceptable. I of course, would be reluctant to believe that the leadership of the APNU would be responsible or direct or any way connive with a fabrication of the result. But that, again, is the word out of the mouths of many in Guyana. Whatever the circumstances, it is an unfortunate situation. Now, I buy what Mr. Wickham has just said, but there is also the fact that a poll or assessment of what people will do is not necessarily reflect reflected in what people do do. In other words, even if you're talking about a swing, generally speaking, it does not necessarily follow that every single constituency will observe that swing. And you know, predicting a poll is very similar to predicting the weather. You have various modes of operation, but you, in the final analysis, you have no means of being certain that what you believe will happen does happen. So while I'm not going to suggest that the figures, such as they are right in terms of Region 4, it is also true that they could be. And my own feeling about it, therefore, is that we need to have it verified. Whatever the verification process established by law is. So that would be my comment in terms of the present situation and what we need. I do not think that anything should be crystallized until that verification process is over. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unfortunate that it has not been done so far. I am reluctant to believe that we could not have accomplished it much sooner than we appear to be having. And that in itself is a misfortune, because, you know, much has been made about the disturbances on the East Coast, for example. But that is only one section of Guyana. There's another section of Guyana as well. What if they decide that they have been put in an invidious position? In other words, Sanka, it's not a one-sided, one-dimensional problem. Both sides feel they have won. Both sides have supporters who are willing to say this without any possibility of doubt. But we are hearing mainly from those who feel that the government is performing in a way it should not have performed. But there's another side, and a substantial other side. This is not a question where, for example, that 80% of the population feels one way and 20% feels another. We are talking about a very close equation. And I would wish that those who most vociferously pontificate on this situation bear in mind that there is another perspective and another group and another agency that has to be shown some concern for. And I would in humility suggest that we wait until the officials have finished the verification before we pronounce on the government's behavior. And you know, the other thing that strikes me is this. There is much comment about the international
observers.
Yes. You know, Sanka, that gives me cause for pause. Traditionally, the international community has had no respect for our views, our positions, our attitudes, our aspirations. We have very often, as a group, spoken about that. But now, all of a sudden, we are bedfellows. These are the same group. Some of these countries in this international consortium practice flagrant violations of electoral practice, but they are also in the chorus. Now, I'm not suggesting that they're wrong to be in the chorus, but all I'm saying is that we in the Caribbean must settle our Caribbean business ourselves. And that is why I have, I am most heartened by the comment made by the chairman of CARICOM, the Honorable Mia Motley. Hers was a fine statement on the situation in Guyana and the way forward. And I would suggest to all those in Guyana, including those who have spoken so far on this program, that we follow her advice and settle this among ourselves, sitting down quietly, without fuss and fanfare, and evaluating a situation which is clearly, at the moment, unsatisfactory to both sides, not to one. I repeat, and I emphasize, to both sides, not to one.
Mm-hmm. Captain Govaya, you were trying to get in there? He's still there? All right. We just want to remind you that this program, What Next for Guyana, is being brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
For the big surprise, big or small, and brilliant metals, we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Big or small, and brilliant metals, we have it all. And brilliant metals, we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. This is Sanka Price with you along with Dennis Johnson. And our topic today, Guyana, what next? And we have in the studio Mr. Cecil Perkham, a career diplomat. We have on the telephone regional political pollster Mr. Peter Wickham. And we have a whole set of calls. So let's take a couple of these calls. You're on the air. Good morning.
Peace be unto you, Mr. Price.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm giving the Creator thanks for a blessed day.
Good.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Go right
okay.
ahead.
Okay. I'd like to say good afternoon to your distinguished guest, to Mr. Wickham, to your moderator. Oh, dear. Can't remember his name. I feel like I purposely done it.
You mean the producer, and that's Mr. Dennis Johnson.
Right, right. Sorry, you are the moderator, the producer, right? And to Barbados. I travel through the Caribbean. I keep abreast of everything that is happening in the world. And I have friends, I've traveled to Guyana. I have friends in Guyana that are very close to me. And I keep abreast of what is going on. I pray that my country, Barbados, at any election time I hope we would never go into this chaos of what happening. I follow up what was going on after the results. And it touched me to see a school buses carrying school children was stoned and children were hurt. If it is not fair, the law is there to do justice. Guyana was down and is rising now again. And investors are going in. And why would you want to destroy by burning cars, stoning bus, blocking roads, fighting, shooting, to bring the country back down again? The law is there. Wait and see what will happen. But don't just... I see this thing happening in the other Caribbean countries, just like Dominica and Haiti. Haiti is so bad that everybody's running from Haiti. Persons that were living here gone back home and blessed with businesses and other things. And, you know, it is sad now to see what is happening. I hope that we don't ever come to this. I mean, we have some people from a lot of these places that these things happening, and they are citizens of this country, and I hope that anytime election come and they feel that the one choice, because we never had that before. They went to court on different times about votes and things like that, but I hope that this country don't ever turn to that. My thing too is I pray for my prime minister because she is the head of CARICOM. With this thing now, I hope that it will settle soon. And she have a lot here on her hand, and I hope that she won't got to be dragged, you know, with that. This is my talk, my piece on it. Thank
you so very much. We got another call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Price. Good morning to your guests. No, I agree with what the captain just said. in regard to the problems. But my question would be, isn't fabrication against the law? That's one. And two, with all of this, would elections be held over? I agree with what she has said in respect to you now coming out, you've just found oil. I think this would be a time to unify, come together in a national interest, and take Guyana out of the rut that it was in for so long. Pray tell me, let common sense prevail and let the country just move on. This is really unacceptable. So I agree with her ably, and I think that this is something that could be resolved. The law is there, and I agree. This fabrication thing, if it is so, why not let the law deal with it? And the big thing to bring real fairness, would you have to hold over elections? Would be the, no.
All right. Thank you very much for your comments. Captain Govaya, thank you for coming back online. And Peter Wigan has also joined us in the studio. One of the things that clearly comes to mind, and this is directed to Captain Govaya as well as Mr. Pilgrim, Cecil Pilgrim, this divide clearly is ethnic. And I'd like to get a comment from both of you as Guyanese on the challenge of this ethnic problem in Guyana. Oh dear, has the call dropped out again? Oh jeez. All right, Mr. Pilgrim, you go ahead. We'll try to get him back.
The ethnic problem in Guyana has always existed. The ethnic division in Guyana was in the first place created by the British. The British developed in Guyana two separate and distinct races, the people of Indian origin and the people of African origin. The people of Indian origin were allowed and encouraged to continue to be Indian in their culture, in their religion, in their attitudes. And the African was turned into a black Englishman. He became the school teacher, the doctor, the policeman, etc. Okay? That came through as two parallel races right up to 1953, in my opinion. 53 saw a little difference, a joining of those two races. And then those two races separated again. So politicians did not create the racial problem in Guyana. Politicians used the racial division in Guyana. So we come to the present situation. It's really very difficult for me to understand that anyone looking at the two presidential candidates could reject President Granger in favor of the other presidential candidate. Looking at all the objective realities of those two candidates.
What makes you say that? I mean, you want to get into more detail?
Yes and no. Mr. Granger, for example, is a man of known integrity and honesty. I don't think anyone so far has accused him of being dishonest or peculiar in any respect. Mr. Ali has a very different character evaluation. I mean, the facts about him are well known.
Yeah. He's on 19 charges. He was Minister of Housing.
Yes.
Related to that.
Yes.
As well as then there's questions about his his academic qualifications as well.
So while of course that is not proved, eh? Let us make it clear. Those are allegations. Those are
mere allegations.
Charges that are laid before him.
Yes.
But if you then have to make an evaluation, it seems to me that you have to avoid looking at those characteristics, so to speak. Now, so that when we talk of elections in Guyana, we are still talking about race in a large degree. If one side puts up a broomstick, as long as that broomstick looks like me, I will vote for that broomstick. Mm-hmm. Now, where do you go from there? Now, equally in Guyana.
Gentlemen, I had to pop in, but I want to say to you, my name is Jerry Gavai, and I'm a Portuguese in Guyana. And I want to really say that while in mass, that may be, or in general terms, there have been a tremendous amount of crossover of Indians into the PNP and Africans into the PPP. And while there was a time when we had more Indian people in Guyana than black people and Portuguese and Amerindians together, that is no longer the case. There may be more Indian people than black people, but they're not more Indian people than the rest of us together. So what is happening with each election, when people start to get angry, it becomes too racial polarization. But this is not just, the PNC is no longer just a black party. The PNC have a lot of mixed people inside, and the PPP got a lot of mixed people inside. So this is now, we are slowly moving away from racial polarization in terms of choosing the party. It is more of people choosing a party that they believe will do better for Guyana. Now, I have spent 15 years in the Army. I know General Granger very well, and you're right. General Granger is a man that commands a lot of respect and so on. And so this, I don't think this is a referendum on President Granger, and I certainly want to make this very clear. The present impasse, nobody is accusing the government. This is about GCOM. The government in an official sense, do not control GCOM. GCOM is an independent body with independent officers doing their work. The accusations are against the people in GCOM, not the government. The government have done nothing at this time. President Granger have done nothing wrong, so nobody's accusing President Granger of any misappropriation of anything at all. This is not about him, and it's not about Afanani. This is about GCOM. At this time in Guyana's history in Guyana and Guyana's state, where GCOM is expected to produce a fair, free, and credible result that we will be able to have a democratically elected and constitutional government. And GCOM at this time, and I was standing there. This is not hearsay. Where GCOM refused, they started the process, aborted the process in front of all of the international observers, in front of all of the ambassadors, Western ambassadors. This was not something done in the back room. This was done where, coincidentally, everybody was in the room when they aborted it. And so this is about GCOM. This is not about President Granger. I just want to make that very clear to everybody in the room.
Peter, your take on...
No, I mean... May I say one thing quickly, Peter, before you do?
Okay, go ahead.
May I say one thing quickly? You know, I was discussing the question of race just now, and Mr. Bariah intervened to say I was talking foolishness. Now, very interestingly, Mr. Gavai himself just said, Indians and black people. You hear me? Let me repeat. Indians and black people. Now you tell me what Indians are.
All right. No, Cecil, let's not get off track. And I think that with respect, a lot of what you said just now was unfortunate. I said earlier in my comments that we have to separate our own perception of individuals from what is the will of the public. And I take your comments, you know, in the best of faith, in the same way I said similar things to what you said on a previous program before the election results were acknowledged. So we may have our preference in terms of who is a better presidential leader. But remember, this conversation is not about what we think or feel. And your reiteration of Granger's strengths, your reiteration of Infernali's weaknesses are all well and good. But just remember that it is your interpretation. And I think I have learned one thing in this business of public opinion, that it is always a dangerous precedent when I assume that my views and opinions are reflected in what everyone else thinks.
Absolutely.
Because often that is not the case. You also said earlier in your conversation that you think that Prime Minister Motley was steering the right course in terms of this being a family dispute and we need to settle it as a family, and I support that entirely. But in the final analysis, what Prime Minister Motley was saying is no different to what the CARICOM observers have said, is no different to what the Europeans and the Americans and everyone else has been saying, that GCOM needs to finish the call. And you're saying that the government is not being given an opportunity, or the other side is not given an opportunity to be heard. And I am concerned because I am not hearing why the other side is not prepared to finish the call. And the reality is that what everyone is saying is the same thing. Prime Minister Motley, everyone, there's a stated procedure. you follow that procedure in relation to nine regions, you deviate from it in relation to one region, you need to give solid reasons as to why. And thus far, GCOM has said precious little about what justification or basis on which they have for not finishing the count. So my speculations as to what the outcome is likely to be based on the swing in those is basically all I can do as an analyst. And it's not based on poll data. It is based on data that's presented at the election that shows a clear trend. So certainly if the region 4 deviates from that trend, I am willing to be persuaded. But I think that what really needs to be heard now from someone in GCOM is, why are you not prepared to do the verifications? Because that's all everybody is asking, and people are getting angry with the Carter Center and whatnot. And all everyone is saying is, look, if you are convinced that the data that you have is correct, hold it up to scrutiny, complete the verifications, and let's conclude this process. And this could have been done a week ago. So I don't think that it's fair to say the other side is not given the opportunity to be heard. The other side is not saying anything. And then I'm hearing distractions about race and all of this lot of foolishness. Look, in the final analysis, this issue is not about race yet. It has been confounded with views on race. Privately, people have spoken to me and said that, you know, the other side is a concern about race and a concern about what quote-unquote other people would do. But publicly, what I have heard is that we have a procedure and a procedure has been breached. So my thing is that the other side has ample opportunity to say President Granger has said, for example, that this has nothing to do with him. He awaits a declaration from GCOM. I've heard Harmon, I believe he's Captain or General Harmon or Major Harmon or whatever, he is in the Army. He has made a similar statement. He's one of the managers of the campaign and said, look, it's a simple situation where we are just waiting for GCOM to make a declaration, and when the declaration is made, we will swiftly move to install the president. As though the whole conversation about the counting and the verification doesn't even exist. So these guys are not acknowledging that they have any knowledge of or any involvement with what is going on in GCOM. It's a separate entity, fair enough. But then let GCOM say, why are you not willing to do the verifications if you are so confident that the result that you have given is what the result is? Let's verify it and see it. If it is that there is a flaw somewhere along the line, do your verifications, declare the result, and then challenge it in the court. And to me, that's fairly straightforward.
One of the things I want to bring out here is, why do you think that there was a swing towards the PPP?
Right, but that is something I'm anxious to talk about as well, because I think it's pretty obvious. When I did my analysis, and as I said, it's in the public domain, so I could talk about it now, plus the fact that it's historic, I felt there were concerns. One of the concerns regarding President Granger is everybody likes him, but President Granger is too slow in relation to dealing with issues. A lot of people felt that things were going ahead in Guyana and President Granger was not fully engaged in what was going on. He was ill, and I accept that. But in the final analysis, he has a problem, and he is no different to Prime Minister Frendo Stewart, to Prime Minister Tillman Thomas. And I said, and Cecil, you will recall on the program tonight, I said that in the Caribbean history, leaders like that have not traditionally done very well. They have not traditionally done very well. President Granger was not a leader long before all of this. He was taken by the AFC, APNU, and given the leadership. So in other words, he became leader in much the way that Tillman Thomas became leader and Frendo Stewart became leader. Not because he was necessarily the best person for the job in terms of him fighting battles over the years, but because he was a nice guy and he was a person that everybody could agree on. And if I look at the history, as I said, those leaders have traditionally not done very well. But all things being equal, I said, well, let's see. My sense is that a majority of Guyanese are of the opinion that he really does take too long to be able to make decisions in this regard, because that's one of his clearly obvious weaknesses. I think the other thing was that there is a concern regarding unity within this ASC, APNU coalition. And I can say that one of the recommendations coming out of my study was that this whole idea of an APNU-AFC versus a PPP-Civic was a challenge, because Guyanese saw the PPP-Civic as a united party that spoke with one voice. They saw the APNU-AFC as a disunited group, especially bearing in mind that you had a gentleman called Shandas who was part of that APNU-AFC group that moved away from group and said exactly that he had reservations about the extent to which Granger was moving quickly enough, dealing with all the issues and responding to concerns within that group. And you have a history of coalition governments, and one of my recommendations is that this idea of an APNU-AFC had to be dismissed, because you had a PNC, which became a PNCR, which became an APNU, which joined with the AFC, which itself was a combination of PPP Civic and PNC factors. Absolute nonsense. You need to unite under a rubric like Team Unity, like the People's Partnership, and you look at the successful coalitions across the region. They have all united under a rubric that says, yes, we may have different views and opinions in relation to party structure and whatnot, but ultimately we are one group. The APNU-AFC has none of that. And you had those recommendations for a year, and what have you done? Nothing. So you present yourself to the people as a disunited group versus united group. And guess what? People seem to have preferred the united group. So those are two little snippets of things that I personally thought were challenging. I think that the AFC part of that group was generally the more progressive part. I think that they were working hard to unite the country and to bring together, but there were still sections of the PNC that seemed to have felt that it was a solid group within the party, that Guyana was theirs and they had a right to move ahead, and they were not necessarily taking into consideration a lot of the region, similar to the one that Shandas represented. And I think that that is the background to all of this. So while I was surprised at the outcome, I think there is solid evidence to suggest that these were the issues of concern. A lot of people focusing on Irfan Ali. Most of those people voted for President
Barrett Jagdeo. Because I was going to ask, right. What about the Barrett Jagdeo factor?
Right.
Because I think that's a major factor.
And that to me is it. I spoke to one of the leaders yesterday, and he was in agreement with me that it is clear that the average Guyanese does not really understand Irfan Ali to be leading anything. As far as they're concerned, mm-hmm. the titular leader of the PNC is former President Jagdeo. Mm-hmm. And they're voting for him. They're voting for Jagdeo. They're not voting for Irfan Ali with all of Irfan Ali's weaknesses. Nobody ain't really taking him on. In all of this, this is a conversation between two presidents, a former president and a current president. And I think that that's the way that Guyanese voted. So, yeah, they get Irfan Ali, but ultimately they don't really see him as the person that's leading. They see the person that's leading as President Jagdeo.
Captain Govaya,
go ahead. I just wanted to come in and say that this election have not defined yet who the people choose. I am here in Guyana, and I don't know who the people choose because we don't know that. We don't know, and so I am not going to say that this election were able to, in any decisive or credible way, choose one over the other, because we don't know that as yet. And so the focus here in Guyana is on GCOM and GCOM getting the task finished. I know we could speculate on the merits, on both of these parties. I think we have a political person in the room that was very accurately said. Both of these parties are big because large parts of our population support them. And to me, I mean, eventually they have to find a way to work together to make sure that this prosperity that is in front of Guyana, every man, woman, and child in Guyana and the Caribbean will benefit from it. But that's a different story. They have to work together. They really represent a large part of our population. But right now, we don't know who the people have chosen, because the region for CUNC have been stopped. And somebody came with a paper and said, this is the result. And nobody knows how that result was done. It was not done according to law. It was not done according to any kind of transparency. It was not done in front of the parties or the observers. And so that is where we are at this time. Now, if this thing escalates, and if in fact GCOM went ahead and used that as an official declaration, and then President Granger accepts that, in the face of all of the world's international condemnation of this, then, of course, we've gone into a different phase of Guyana's operation. Right now, we are still with GCOM. The judge is ruling at 1:30 this afternoon about whether the court will have jurisdiction to listen to the argument, whether the order that should stand to directing GCOM to go back to the verification process. So if the court rules at 1:30 this afternoon that she have jurisdiction to listen to the case, then on Tuesday she will rule on the case to say whether she agrees that GCOM should do the verification. Now, I mean, to me, that's a clear-cut case. We had one exactly like this in 2001. We had a gentleman who went to the court to force GCOM to do a recount of Region 4, exactly the same thing back in 2001, and the judge ruled that they must go back and do the recount. And they went and do the recount from the ballot box. So, I mean, the precedent has been set. So once Thursday this afternoon, we will know. On Tuesday, we will know for sure. So as we stand now, nobody knows who won these elections for sure. It could be the government who won the election, but we could only know that after a transparent and credible tallying and tabulation of the results of Region 4.
The last question I'll put before we go back to the phone lines, because we have a whole full board of calls. The international community, they're heavily involved, heavily invested in these elections, and they seem to be really all over the place. Now, I was there in the media center. I saw the American ambassador. I saw the EU representative. I saw the British ambassador and the Canadian High Commissioner as well. For us in Barbados, that is like really foreign. But these people were actively involved. As a diplomat, what do you make of this? Why should they?
Let me give you a perspective why they're so involved.
All right. Well, we heard Captain Govaya and then Cecil Pilgrim.